We're going to start with the other bills tomorrow. I think Senator Pappas, Higher Education, and maybe, what, Senator Vickerman, Senator Murphy, I think. But let's begin today with Senate File 1298, Senator Gimsey. Joined by former Commissioner of Finance, potentially.
Probably.
Something I don't, Senator.
MMB.
No, we're changing the name of the agency.
MMB.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 1298 is a finance or a department bill that changes the name of a couple of the agencies, the Department of Finance, included into the Department of Management and Budget. I have with me Commissioner Tom Hansen, who will go through the bill for you. Prior to that, we have a delete all amendment.
Yeah, and let me just indicate, Senator Betzel, did you hear this bill in division?
Yes, we did, Mr. Chair. The bill just was a revises instructions, and so although there is a division report,
we would not
need to offer that. The A1 amendment is more explicit, which includes some instructions to the reviser.
All right. Let's, because we're basically dealing with a new bill, let's adopt the delete all amendment, which has been distributed, the A1 amendment. Senator Betzel moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we'll have Commissioner Hansen go through the sections of the bill, and we'll answer any questions.
Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for hearing this bill today. It changes the department, or the statutorily, the name is the Department of Finance. If you recall back to the 2007 legislative session, the legislature passed and the governor signed into law a merger of the Department of Employee Relations and the Department of Finance. Technically, in statute, we are the Department of Finance. We're seeking to change the name to the Department of Management and Budget. The delete all that you adopted was Mr. Watson's thorough work in going through and making sure that we had every reference taken care of. I can, Mr. Chairman, walk through it section by section, but it's just generally the references that where it says Department of Finance, we now reference Department of Management and Budget.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Gimsey or Commissioner Hansen, what's the difference between management and administration?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, good question. The our goal and our focus is more of an enterprise approach to payroll, accounting, human resources, and those type of activities. It's an enterprise approach based on analytical and financial and human resources. The Department of Administration is,
They're an enterprise, too.
Right. It is. And frankly, in other states, and there's a lot of my counterparts in other states are not only human resources and finance, but also admin. And the finance is just a division within the Department of Administration. So it is, I think, in at least 20 to 25% of the states, you have all of that together. What we have, what our focus is, we separate the human resources and the finance from the rent and the other admin. But they're similar functions.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Hansen, how would my average constituent who's trying to find out some information that's in your office, how would they connect up management and budget to what they're looking for? I mean, finance is finance. Mm-hmm. You know, and health and human services and human rights, you know, they all have names. Management and budget doesn't say anything to anybody. I think this is really wrong-headed, right. But Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, the name we had worked with after our merger was Finance and Employee Relations. And after extensive meetings with the with staff in the agency, there was a strong desire to form a new name around our new mission, that finance and employee, and form, you know, merging employee relations and finance for the people that have worked there for years, and I used to work at the House, so the analogy for you would be, you know, merging the House and the Senate for some of them. So it's, I know it, it's on a much smaller scale, but there was a desire to name it something different, and the new for the new focus. But as far as how we've worked very diligently at informing state employees that we're now the employment, you know, the employment agency, we have just inaugurated our TAP Minnesota website that people can access to, you know, for expenditures in state government. We have made it a big effort to get our name out and have people know what it is. So,
further questions, comments? Okay. Anybody want to do anything with the bill, or just kind of?
Mr. Chair,
General Olson.
I'd be happy to move the bill.
Thanks, General Olson, for your help in that matter. Senator Olson moves that Senate File 1298, as amended, be recommended to pass. There's, I take it, no further discussion. Well, Senator Pappas.
Well, now I'm curious about this whole merger. Is why didn't we just merge everything under administration?
Good.
And or why didn't we put employee relations with administration instead of with finance? I mean, it seems kind of like
finance
a random choice.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, the DOOR, former DOOR and former finance actually had joint employees, the Semaphore Human Resources System. We had actually people who, a unit that worked with both agencies. It is a service-oriented agency. We have systems, as we have talked repeatedly in Senator Betzold's committee, our Semaphore and our MAPS touch every agency. Actually, a third of our employees are technology, information technology. So we have a lot of common bonds that in our service across state government. It's a little different with admin. Admin has a lot of other functions. Yeah, they administer the buildings. They have rent. It's more service-oriented, cleaning and that sort of thing.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it's never easy making substantial changes and merging departments in the first place. And, you know, the human and financial resources, I think, you know, have some compatibility, as you've pointed out. The day may come, you know, working with admin, with which does manage and administer a lot of all the plant resources, the contractual things, and there's a lot of distinctive functions in admin. There may come a day when that seems to make sense, and I think it would be easier to do that on a slower preparation for a transition rather than to you know, try to bunch of things and cultures together. That is very disruptive, and so it has to be handled very carefully in order to make it not lose ground in terms of the functions. And given the budget challenges we've had right now, I think that there's plenty on your plate for operating with that merger without bringing more to bear. But I think it is certainly warrant and probably will have discussion in the future.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, members, if you look in your old blue books, I think pre-72, those functions were all in a broader Department of Administration. And then the trend in the 70s and the 80s was to break out. break out these functions into separate agencies.
Look at our old blue books pre-72. I mean,
yeah.
Can we come over to your office and look at them? Or
we have them.
Or does Mr. Watson have all of them in his office?
Watson probably has all of them.
I've got one from like 37. That
Mr.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I know in companies that I've worked in, other organizations, changing a name or changing an address comes with a significant cost for reprinting business cards and envelopes and letterhead and all those kinds of things. What is the cost of actually changing this name?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, I, in my personal life as well as managing my agency, am real cheap. And if you look back to, if you retained our November forecast, you will notice we just put stickers where, you know, you can look through. It says management and budget, but you can see Department of Finance underneath it. So we used up all of our,
yeah,
all of that, you know, our forecast type of documents. And then we used up our stationery. And then I have, if you get a card from me, probably in the next 20 years, it'll say Department of Finance because I'm going to use it all up. So we have done our best to use. I don't throw any. If you come to my house, you'll see I don't throw anything away either.
Use the backsides of
yeah.
invitations from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for the very cheap commissioner? All right. We have Senator Olson's motion in front of us. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Gimsey. Commissioner Hansen. Okay. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, would you
yes.
like me to go next?
Yeah, I would.
Mr. Chair, I just received the delete all amendment, and I think there's one little thing missing in it. I'm just had a chance to review it very quickly, so I wonder if I could just have a moment to talk with my counsel. Missing. There's some language missing, it seems. I can't find it.
Just been putting them on.
Well, members, we have an agenda for other bills, and
Mr. Chair, I could start explaining it and just ask if I could get some staff here to help.
Yeah, Senator Anderson. Yeah, Senator Anderson, why don't you begin your bill and see if we can catch up? Maybe if we have another author show up, we'll lay your bill over until. But we have one author who can't be found, two authors in the tax committee, one of whom is chairing it.
Nice staff. Thank you.
Well.
He works for me. Help me.
You want
Dan?
You
can start by yourself.
Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to try Senator Anderson with Senate File 657. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So Senator Anderson, do we have a...
There's a delete all amendment, A15, that I just Oops. Received. So do you have copies yet?
We don't have the division report.
Oh, we might not even have the copies yet for the committee.
Well, why don't you... Start explaining the bill.
It doesn't affect any of the numbers or dollars in the bill. So really what I intended to do was go through this. Do you have the spreadsheet? Hopefully you should have the spreadsheet, and I can just go through that.
No.
It says federal stimulus bill, energy programs.
I believe that's in the packet.
Yeah, that should be available for everyone.
Yeah, that's in the packet.
I'm missing. This language was supposed to be moved, and I can't find it anywhere. It's supposed to be in the residential program. Move from weatherization to residential, but I can't find it. So. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Federal Energy Green Infrastructure and Green Jobs Energy Program Stimulus Funding Bill. And I think I need a snap of your name. This is for, well, the purpose of these funds, it's about $200 million that were passed by the federal government for the purpose of saving energy, producing renewable energy, and creating jobs. And so what we've done here is, if you look at the spreadsheet with me, I'll go through that and tell you how we've divided it up in my division. The weatherization program is the biggest portion of this, and that's $131,937,000 that we've received for weatherization programs. Keep in mind that this is well over 10 times the amount Minnesota normally receives for weatherization. And weatherization is for low-income households only across the state of Minnesota. So under in a normal year, we may weatherize some 4,000 homes. With this amount of money, we're hoping we're able, the plan is to deliver this money and get it out the door as quickly as possible and to weatherize tens of thousands of homes for low-income Minnesotans. And so that is an existing program. We have just a small amount of language that directs the agency in this. For example, Senator Vickerman had expressed a strong interest in targeting foreclosed homes to see if we could advance some weatherization improvements to foreclosed homes. That's one of the things we've requested a waiver on, or requested the agencies to ask for a federal waiver to be able to do that. But we haven't changed the spending for the weatherization program. We've just we just appropriate that to the Office of Energy Security. The remaining money that you see on the spreadsheet consists of the state energy program, which again is something we normally get about $900,000 for that program, and this year we're receiving about $54 million for that program. And that's a pretty wide open program to be used for energy improvements of all different types. There's also some energy efficiency grants to local governments. And so moving down the spreadsheet, the EECBG, those are the energy efficiency grants to local governments. And one portion is divided by a formula to large cities and counties. And then the remainder, the $4,258,000, is going to be a competitive grant program that the Office of Energy Security will portion out to remaining cities and communities around the state who apply for those grants. And those are all for the purposes of energy efficiency improvements in public buildings. Then you moving on, the rest of the spreadsheet dollars that you'll see.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I've talked with you on a couple points relative to school buildings. I noticed the public building retrofits schools and local government. Are schools eligible in either of the other energy efficiency provisions?
They are. Mr. Chair, and I'll get to that, but the energy efficiency grants to local governments, the first two block grant dollars are for all, I believe they're for any local government public building, so I believe those would include schools. But the part that we've created, the new program that we've created, the public building retrofits, is definitely, schools are definitely eligible for that. I'll have to check on the other piece of it, and I can check with, is Dan here? You can ask him that question, perhaps. I can't find the, is it in here anywhere? It's supposed to be in the residential program. Supposed to be moved from weatherization to residential.
It is already part of the it's for the weatherization. So John,
she said it should be in the residential.
Well, she said you couldn't.
All right, let me just continue on the spreadsheet, and I'll ask my fiscal analyst, if Mr. Mueller is coming, hopefully. He's on his way. To answer your specific question about the block grants and to make sure that schools are eligible. I believe they are, and I can look for the language on that.
My folders are ready.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Okay. That program, the block grant program, is on If you, do you have the delete all amendment yet?
No.
No. Okay.
Salzman's here.
Yeah, we have the delete all.
It's for local units of government.
So yes. Senator Anderson?
Local government and school districts.
Senator Anderson?
Is in there. Mr. Chair.
You know, we went to your bill because we were missing authors. Senator Saltzman, I noticed, walked in. Would you, should we lay your bill over? Here's Mr. Mueller.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair.
And then give you a
we
few minutes. But
have the amendment for everyone when we come back.
Yeah, we don't have copies of the amendment. So why don't we lay your bill over, go to Senator Saltzman, and try to rush as best you can. Okay, so we'll lay over Senate File 657 and go to Senate File 292. Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Before we begin, let me indicate that we have a couple bills on the agenda, Senator Olson and Senator Saltzman, which I think are actually primarily tax bills that Senator Tomasoni, I believe, wanted to review in terms of economic development. So they come from the division, but I think, Senator Saltzman, you're looking to have this bill referred to the tax committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am.
Okay. Well, Senator Saltzman, Senate File 292. We do have a fiscal note, which you should offer some explanation of as well. But Senator Saltzman.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. This is Senate File 292. It is the Minnesota Business Investment Act. And just briefly, some background is that we all know about the global economy that we face and that Minnesota's economy has a broader problem. Starting in 2006, our economy has been underperforming the rest of the nation. And this is the first instance of this stagnation in our state in a generation. We have done an excellent job in Minnesota in terms of research and developing ideas, but economists point to the smaller numbers of new companies now forming and growing in our state than in others. This means we are not as nimble and able to change with the national economy changes. A crucial component of new business development is access to capital. And I believe you have in your handouts a chart that really points out the changes, the different stages that a business goes through from an idea that could be born in Minnesota, either at, say, the U of M or in one of the small startup companies. But those companies need continuing seed money in order to be able to grow and make it from the lab bench to the marketplace. This bill proposes essentially creating a tax credit that would be slated to take effect in 2013. The tax credit will go to insurance companies that will, in exchange, invest a portion of their reserves in venture capital funds that will, in turn, invest in small Minnesota businesses who demonstrate high growth potential. These provisions do not change the risk of these reserve funds because they are already tightly regulated by the State Department of Commerce. It simply creates a credit for those for those funds to be invested here in Minnesota. And it's important to note that insurance companies can invest in many places. It would be best if they could invest those funds here in our state. We are seeing just across the river in Wisconsin with angel investor funds what that growth has done, in that companies that need these funds will look for investors. And if we don't have incentive programs, which are tax credits, in order to keep investor money here or leverage those dollars, these companies are going elsewhere. Or funds are coming to invest in these companies, and after a while, since these funds are coming from the East and West Coast, eventually those companies are then relocated into these other areas. So the fiscal note that you see, Mr. Chair, reflects when these tax credits go into effect in 2013, that the companies, that these investments are put in place for 4 years, and the tax credits do not start paying out until those dollars have been put to good use, have created jobs in Minnesota. And so that is a general overview of this particular bill. It would create a fund over time of $200 million, and that the tax credit is for 80% spread over 4 years. This is a program. The CAPCO program was started in several other states, and It has had some bumps along the way, but we've learned from those mistakes, and this is a better version of that program that builds on the strengths of its success. There are a couple other places in the bill that refer to fees, and I think that's also why Senator Tomassoni wanted to see this. On lines 4.11, there is a $7,500 fee payable at time of application, and then an annual non-refundable certification fee of $5,000 on lines 9.7. And also the department would conduct an annual review of each investment company to determine if the company is abiding by the requirements. So, Mr. Chair, that's sort of a quick overview of a very a promising program in Minnesota to help us build our emerging companies. And it really works well with some of the other things that we're doing in terms of energy and high-tech businesses in our state.
Well, appreciate the efforts, Senator Saltzman. I know the last time we did this, or tried to do some of this in a significant way, Senator Kelly and I, former Senator Kelly and I, had several pieces of legislation in 2001. We had surplus monies, and we were doing a lot out of the general funds, so obviously we don't have that ability this time around. So we'll see what kind of magic Senator Bach can bring about within his committee where they create money. I mean, all we can do here in this committee, obviously, is utilize the money we have existing to us, whether on a plus side or a minus side. But I've always admired the creativity of the tax committee and wish we could adopt some of that. So hopefully you'll have some success in that regard. Let me correct Senator Bach. Is that you're going to help them invent some money, right, to do this, I hope? Let me just ask relative to the fees. Any sense as to how did you arrive at those particular fees?
I'm going to ask someone to help me with that, Mr. Chair, if I might. Mr. Korn Gold is here and has been very active in this bill as to how those fees were determined.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Korn Gold. I'm the president of Enhanced Capital Partners. We have participated in programs in other states that are similar to this one. And this is a standard fee, if I can answer the question, that's enough so that, you know, one of the hallmarks of the program is it doesn't create an additional administrative burden. So the fee was set in an amount for all the applicants to pay, which would exceed the cost of either outsourcing the application review or an allocated, you know, designation of somebody's time. It's usually a 60-day application review process, and that fee was determined based on kind of the historical number of applicants.
And were you involved in with the promulgation of the entirety of the bill?
I'm involved in the sense of, you know, been a subject matter reference point, sure.
So if we assume, and I think to be fair, the Senate has been more sympathetic than the House relative to trying to work with tax credits in terms of job creation and so on. How would you see this playing out over a 5 to 10 year basis?
Well, a couple of comments, if I may. One, I know that sometimes because it does function off of a tax credit, this gets lumped in with a lot of other tax credits. What makes this program, at least in my experience, unique is a couple of things. One is obviously the timing mismatch, where this is private capital that will come in immediately, yet this year, we hope, to be available for small businesses. And as you've heard, the tax credit doesn't hit until 2013, and even then incrementally over a period of time. So that's number one. So on a present value basis, it's actually quite a modest credit, and yet we get the benefit of that capital here. What tends to happen in the programs in other states is that while there are pacing milestones that require that a certain amount of capital has to go out into businesses, the experience of other states is that the private participants beat those milestones significantly. And the reason is that the participants in this program, unlike a conventional fund, that a manager would manage. They don't take any profits from any of these investments until the entire fund has been invested in small businesses in the state. And I think that's the other driving point. And the last point I would make is that, again, unlike some tax credits, where people always wonder, would this behavior have taken place anyway in the absence of the tax credit? And that's always, you know, a question. In this case, there's 100% certainty. These insurance companies are not investing in small businesses in Minnesota. They invest in these kinds of programs elsewhere. And so it takes a credit like this to try to peel off some of those reserves.
And how many other states are doing something similar to this?
Well, most similar. I mean, they're actually in the evolution of this program. 10 states have adopted and then reauthorized it a total of 28 times. So there have been 28 of these programs. I mean, over $1 billion of this has been invested. But as you've heard, the program's really evolved. It had some clear flaws when it started, and different programs through different iterations have responded to those criticisms. So this is the next iteration. It's actually a lower credit and a larger delay, so it's more favorable economically, obviously, to the state. And I would say like this have been a few recent programs, and the success of those programs has been outstanding.
Just taking a look at the language, I note that in terms of a qualified business, you provide that non-engaged, for instance, in professional services, so my law office couldn't take advantage of this, as an example.
Right.
You stay away from services. So are you looking more at the high-tech, biomedical kinds of – I mean, do you have any specification in terms of the types of industries that you think would take advantage of this within this state?
Sure. First of all, the excluded categories are really those categories that have been determined they really don't need any help. So that's why law firms and accounting firms and even real estate development are excluded. This program is really more of a small business finance program than just a high-tech or biotech venture capital program. It's that too, but it's more than that. One of the aspects of this program that I think is sometimes overlooked because people like to focus on the high-tech, high-growth businesses is the fact that in many cases it's a smaller town business that isn't bankable for whatever reason, doesn't have the collateral or the balance sheet to get a bank loan. And as we know in today's world, it's particularly difficult, may need $500,000, $750,000 to expand a plant and hire more people. There's really nowhere to go for that kind of money in this world as well. So it is the high-tech companies that are in this valley of death that you saw on the chart, but it's also those companies outstate that really don't have any capital resources. And in many cases, those businesses just don't expand, or in some cases, if they can't get the capital, they end up just shutting down.
Well, so if we're talking, say, some of the smaller cities, would retail establishments be something that would fit that definition then?
It could be a retail establishment. Historically, retail establishments have had access to other capital. This bill is really designed to try to plug the gaps in the system, not to try to double up where other access already exists. So it wouldn't be prohibited, I think of it more as a certainly as you get into outstate, so smaller towns. So the guy in Bemidji who can't go to his bank has no way to get capital, and a VC firm, first of all, the VC firms in Minnesota, as a lot of us know, have gotten so big they're not investing in Minnesota anymore, which not to knock them, but the St. Paul Ventures and the Norris Ventures of the world, they've grown over time. So those are national investment firms. The VCs won't come here and look at a business unless it's a very high growth, high tech business that needs $5 million or more. So while it sounds counterintuitive, the guy who actually does just need $750,000, if he can't go to his bank, he's really stuck. And so sometimes those are high-tech businesses, and sometimes they're not.
So, again, I'm trying to think of the a situation in maybe a smaller city. If there was some startup manufacturing plant that manufactured, I don't know, up north, recreational equipment, canoes, canoe paddles, whatever.
Exactly. And that's a perfect example where, for a business like that, where he needs working capital to try to hire his employees to buy the equipment to make what he's eventually going to sell, if he can't borrow that money from a bank, and so a good example is the guy who's going to start up, he doesn't have any collateral to give to a bank. And so unless he has a personal guarantee that's meaningful, which most people don't, he really can't get going. We can get him the working capital to hire the people to get his equipment in to actually then make whatever it is he's going to make and start that sales process. So that's actually a perfect example.
Okay.
Chairman.
And finally, if I can, I asked about the high-tech kinds of opportunities, and you've suggested that might be, depending on the nature of it, maybe a little bit beyond the scope of this, but we've put effort in the last couple of years to the university in terms of their biomedical facilities. And the hope is that you build up the university as a stronger research institution, but the other part of it is the economic development aspect of it. Would there be any tie-in in terms of working with the university as this, as these facilities come online, as over the next several years we develop, we strengthen what used to be a pretty strong biomedical aspect of the university? What's the intersection?
There is a possibility, Mr. Chair, that there has been some discussion with the university that potentially, not to say there would be, but could there be one of these funds be developed for the university, or certainly to make them to make these funds available to them, as with any business. One thing that this bill does not do is that it does not restrict regions, does not restrict the kinds, say, just, for green jobs. And then in talking to the people on the front line, talking to the people who are in this business right now, and this came from people who are in Greater Minnesota, they did not want those kind of restrictions on the funds. So the university is certainly a player in this. I think they said they could use this entire fund themselves with some of the things that they're doing that are most promising. But we certainly see them a player in this and having access to these dollars like any other business would have.
And if I could also add to that, Senator, one of the first things that we would do, because that's such a great source of promising businesses, is sit down with the folks at the university to really understand what they're incubating, because this is then the capital that's going to take them from that incubation process and hopefully get them well on their way.
Senator Mitzen.
Yeah, this tool has been used quite successfully in Wisconsin, and could you guess, or in terms of jobs and dollars invested in our neighboring state through this program? Is there any numbers out there? I know that we've lost some potential jobs in Minnesota because we don't have this tool in place, and Wisconsin's been doing it quite successfully, the way I understand.
They did, and I believe I have something. Let me see if I have Wisconsin. On the sheet that I have, 3,000, yeah. Okay, great, thanks. 3,300 jobs were created or retained through that program, through the businesses that received funding with an average salary of about $50,000 in high-tech jobs, and that's obviously the average. One of the nice things is that they tend to have above the normal wage median.
So they're good-paying jobs, of course.
They're good-paying jobs, exactly.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That program was just one of many where the studies show that the benefits, more than pay for the tax credits. And that was the case in Wisconsin, where, unlike the bill proposed in Minnesota, there was not a significant delay. In that case, the tax credits began immediately.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you. Senator Salzman, how does the, and I'm looking at the certification and the non-refundable application fee of $7,500, that fee applies to the insurance company that would be applying for the tax or for the credit. Is that correct?
Right. That's the investment manager. I'll have them respond, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, that is for, that there are these funds created within this, so they will be fund managers. And so for the fund to be created, not for a business to apply, but I'll have Mr. Korngold explain that as well, that there are funds created, that there are fund managers. So all of this money is not under one person, but sort of competing funds that are going to go out, and these fund managers are going to look for the businesses that are going to be the most profitable. So that is for the actual fund. I'll have Mr. Korngold explain that in more depth.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my questions relate to more of, and I think this is a great idea. I think there's a lot of small entrepreneurs that would like to either increase their business or expand or even start a business, but they probably are not the the size of they're probably a little bit larger than what you mentioned the banks would actually fund, probably way too small to go out and try to seek it on the capital market. But I was just wondering if this applies to each individual applicant. So I'm on page 4. Mm-hmm. Or does it apply to one, let's say, insurance company that actually is going to handle maybe a number of applications?
That is more correct, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump. And Mr. Korngold can explain that it's for the actual fund manager, not for the individual businesses that would be going out, because that would be very prohibitive. Certainly, perhaps, Mr. Korngold, you can explain that a little bit more.
Sure. So the way that the program works is that professional managers here in Minnesota will compete to try to raise money from insurance companies. And before they can go out and even try to market themselves to insurance companies, they have to be certified that they meet the objective criteria that's laid out in the statute. For example, the money management experience that they have and a clean record, obviously, and those sorts of things. As part of that review, that's where they pay, the fund manager pays that application fee
to the state.
Just to offset any costs. And what some states have done is hired an accounting firm to review those applications. It's really to cover that. Once they've raised money from the insurance companies, however, there's obviously no cost to the business that receives the funding other than just whatever the terms of the investment are.
And then, Mr. Chairman, a question relating to how would this be marketed to the prospective businesses? And then will this be competitive in terms of, interest? Or are there limitations on the cost or the cost of the money?
It's competitive, and so since there are pacing requirements where we have to invest significant dollars according to a certain pace, what tends to happen is that there's a nice balance between it is just a free market approach, so when we're assessing the risk of a company, we're negotiating terms just like any other investor would with that business. But because we have to invest a certain amount of dollars into businesses that actually qualify for the qualified business definition in Minnesota, along a certain time frame, we tend to end up being more flexible over time than a typical investor might, who can just say, oh, well, then, I'm just not going to make the investment if I don't like the term.
Well, Mr. Chairman, sometimes the free market approach isn't exactly very competitive, especially when you look at credit cards and credit card rates. And I know a lot of businesses, small businesses, operate using credit off of credit cards, so.
Yeah, these tend to be very standard very standard rates. I mean, these are not – I mean, we have businesses in every program who would stand up and say, not only do they get turned down by everybody, but we've ended up being very fair, not actually just in the negotiation of the terms, but I think what – especially in times like we're all living through right now, what a lot of our businesses say is that unlike an institution that's based in, you know, wherever – we really work with our businesses, because if we have failed businesses, you know, that's a real problem for us economically as well as for this program. And so, you know, we have, unfortunately, businesses that are behind or, you know, behind plan or haven't paid us. Those are businesses that we're much more flexible with than a typical institution would. And the pricing is the same.
And how about the marketing of this?
It's all over the map. I would say it's one thing that we always think we can do a better job of is how to get the word out. We love that when we've had a regulatory agency that regulates this program really help us and take an active role in helping to get the word out. In some states, we actually, with the regulating agency, will do tours of all parts of the state to make sure that that people hear about it. But I would say that's something we can constantly improve upon. Not enough people hear about this as an available resource.
Thank you.
Further questions for Senator Saltzman or Mr. Korngold?
On that last question, Mr. Chair, in terms of marketing, that there's a package of legislation. There's this. There's also an angel investor bill that Senator Bach will be hearing, and some other initiatives that we as a state have to do a better job. It's not just up to the folks who'll be handling these funds, but what are we really doing to reach out to our businesses to look at some of the federal dollars that are available in terms of research? And that's one thing that we have some other legislation on related to having sort of a better business plan in terms of our economic development and how we're helping our businesses in Minnesota. So I think it's not just one group. It's how DEED works with us and how we as a legislature really work with our businesses on what their needs are.
Chairman.
Sir Minson.
Yeah, this is just, I think, one tool of about five or six that we've looked at in the Economic Development Committee. And at least in the committee, that committee, we were convinced that we need these things to be competitive with our neighboring communities. And in the long run, they'll more than pay for themselves. So if it's appropriate, I would move the bill and recommend it to pass and go to the tax committee, I guess?
That is correct. Okay, we have Senator Metzen's motion in front of us that Senate File 292 be recommended to pass. We refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. So thank you, Mr. Korngold, Senator Saltzman. Okay, next we have Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 913 is my effort to try and get cities and townships to work more cooperatively together on land use planning. The current situation is we have a lot of sprawl happening, and it's not unique to just the metropolitan area, but around our communities where property is getting subdivided in commonly in 5-acre lots, and it's just not the best use long term of our land base. And we need to find a way to get cities and townships and cities ultimately end up moving infrastructure out to a lot of these areas. And it's very, very cost prohibitive to move water and sewer and stormwater and things out to developments outside the perimeter of a city when there's not enough density. So I've been, I talked with both the townships and the cities again this morning to see if they can find some agreement. Basically what it does is creates a joint powers board between the city and the surrounding townships and has them define a growth area and then has them work together on what that development should look like. We still have some work to do with the cities and the townships and the counties on that subject, and I'm not even sure we're going to get that all done this year. But this issue has to be raised. We are having a huge impact on our carbon footprint with all of the sprawl that's happening and all the people commuting in to go to work. So this is my effort to try and get the cities and towns to work together more cooperatively on that. The reason I believe we were pulled to finance was there's a provision in here in Section 1 on school siting that makes a change there. And originally I thought there was a Dibble bill, and I thought that provision was not going to be carried in the education finance bill. Now I understand it is being carried in the education finance bill. So I think, and if Senator Stump agrees, I think Section 1, the provision relative to school siting, can probably be taken out of here, and I do believe that's the reason we're here.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, Senator Bogg, also there, we will need some explanation of the fiscal note, and there's a small general fund impact. So possibly we could have Mr. Mossman just go through the preliminary fiscal note we have so everybody understands, because it shows a more significant cost to the state in the fiscal note, which I believe will be taken care of. But Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair and members, just to be clear, what was passed out, the only thing that was available was on the bill that was introduced. That's not what's before you right now. So the only part that really that is relevant of the fiscal note that was passed out, and we only had a preliminary, is really page 5 and 6, which is the Office of Administrative Hearings, who believes they'll have some small amount of additional possible work for resolving disputes that might come to them under some new responsibilities here in looking at unincorporated areas between municipalities. The Office of Administrative Hearings has authority to assess a fee for those costs, and so the net cost is zero. They believe they'll be able to charge the $7,000 in fees, as indicated in the fiscal note there, of a $50 filing fee plus the hours. And so both their additional workload and their revenues to cover that should involve a net zero. That is the fiscal impact for the bill as it sits here before you now.
Okay, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I'm I don't know if I'm pleased or surprised to know that you track numbers as small as $7,000.
Well, like I said, in the finance committee, we have to be careful. And we just don't have that wide range of freedom that you have in the tax committee. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Chairman. A 7 in the tax committee would mean $7 million.
Mr. Chairman, I thought all committees scored things under $50,000 is kind of negligible.
Not here.
We do. The balance.
Senator Pariseau.
I have a question of Senator Bach, and it is more not having to do with finance, but as I read the description of, and heard your explanation of the bill, it sounds like something that will be an optional or a change to what's happening out there now, where Bowser and the Soil and Water Districts are doing this kind of thing. They're working, you know, for development purposes on water quality. It's based on water quality, but it's become a little war out there between people who can annex, cities that can annex, and townships who are being cowed.
Okay. Well,
and so I'm wondering how many of these models are we going to have in statute, and with different jurisdictions for carrying them out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perez, I don't know if
and, the, and joint power and the watershed district has become the joint powers board for the purposes of the one out there now.
Except that, sir, I don't know that anybody in the city is on that.
There are cities and there are cities. I mean, you know, the watershed has a board, and the people who serve on it are typically county commissioners from different sections and counties within, even different cities within a county.
The issue, Mr. Chairman, is somewhere down the road, cities are asked to provide infrastructure outside of their corporate boundaries. And when the development has happened and the cities had no involvement in the process of how the land's been developed, it it is very cost prohibitive to bring that infrastructure out there. So somehow I think we have to create some process by which the towns that are on the perimeter of the cities, we define some kind of a growth area, the natural area we think the city should grow, and that the town and the cities work together on what that development plan should be for that area.
So it's called an annexation process, I think, Mr. Chairman, and it's defined in several ways in statute. But, you know, some of them do it just by ordinance, some do it by ordinance or agreement with, and most of them that have, in my area, those who have been doing it with agreement with the townships, you know, they work with them and work with them because typically there's demand on both sides. Have now they're starting to move into, we're going to do it by annexation, by ordinance from now on. It's starting to cause more problems.
Mr. Chair,
how many models we can have out there colliding with each other?
Well, Mr. Chair, it is my understanding that are counties now responsible for the planning functions within townships? So do you bring them in? I understand because it's the cities that provide the infrastructure and that those agreements need to be there, but how does that, where do the counties play into this?
The Joint Powers Board has to submit that plan to the county board, and the county board has the authority to reject it. So that's the level at which the county board is engaged.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bach knows from previous committees that this is not my favorite bill. The part that I liked, we incorporated into the E-12 bill about the schools. You know, I see this as heavy-handed big government, the state telling the local townships and counties and cities, you know, what their planning has to be, putting restrictions on landowners, on land development opportunities. It's very restrictive, saying that anything has to be 1 in 40 acres in unincorporated areas. I have really some major problems with it, you know, and we're saying, well, it's to reduce greenhouse gases because we want people to quit driving as much. And, you know, sometimes I think that when we try and push everyone together, we also cause other problems. Sometimes when we have high densities, we have high crime too. And when we have people who are unsatisfied with where they get to live, they're not happy people. And, you know, in this country where we value freedoms and freedom of choosing our lifestyles in a lot of ways, this is just really heavy-handed to me, and I think it would be best not to move forward with it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stumpf.
I would like to take Senator Bach's suggestion and remove Section 1. But I think there's a couple things that are kind of going at odds here. And those of us that sit on the Environment Committee have heard proposals that would increase the fees by an enormous amount in terms of, like, what cities have to do for their water and wastewater and clean water. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate, you know, because I think what you're trying to do is to make things more efficient and more streamlined. And at the same time, we've got legislation that's going to increase the costs of cities to function. I think there's got to be a happy medium because if you look at what Senator Bach mentioned, it's exactly true that the infrastructure costs and many of these communities is backbreaking for the taxpayers. And it's true, especially up in my area where you have a lot of flooding occur. I mean, you really need to have long-range planning in place if you're going to try to save or minimize some of the natural disasters. A good example, this morning I was visiting with Mr. Lacasmo from the DNR, and on when you look at a city like Fargo, which has been expanding very, very rapidly for you know, decades, their needs for long-term planning, they should have been looking at that kind of a bowl that they're building in, because, I mean, now to try to put dikes up along the river where there's very expensive homes and everything is going to be extremely expensive. So it's a delicate kind of a balance between individual rights of people and where they live and how they live, and the need for safety and infrastructure and services that they all want. But anyway, we did take the provision, Section 1 provision, which relates to schools, and that's part of the education bill that was passed. And it probably would be best if that, you know, section came out.
So Senator Stumpf moves deletion of Section 1 of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Is there further discussion on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm a co-author on this bill, and one of the reasons I am is because there's elements in here that deal with the preservation of open space, which I'm very interested in. We had a task force that was put together last session to look into ways to preserve ag land, open space land, forest land. Senator Vickerman and I were on that task force together, and there are some elements in Senator Bach's bill that deal with that. And if you take a look on, for example, on page 2, it's 2.17, it says, include cluster development site standards designed to avoid development on or fragmentation of or interference with prime farmland soils, tillable farmland, large tracts of land in agricultural use, woodlands, and other significant stands of vegetation. And there's other references in here, too, toward preservation of open space. This one residential unit per 40 acres is kind of gets at that to some extent. And one of the things that we learned in the task force that Senator Vickerman and I were on is that there's a broad range of differences between counties. Chisago County, for example, is allowing uninterrupted urban sprawl at the rate of 5 acres per lot. There's no prohibition beyond that from what we heard in testimony. And that's in sharp contrast to Stearns County. In the western part of the county, they've got a prohibition of, you know, housing development greater than one per 160 acres. So they're trying hard to preserve agricultural land, prevent the fragmentation of at least in western Stearns County. Now, I know this, I can understand why this is troublesome to townships and to people that want to maintain as absolute much freedom as possible. But one thing I found interesting this last Easter weekend, I was down in Florida, and I noticed the main editorial in the Tampa newspaper was about this very subject that we're talking about. And apparently in Florida, they got a Department of Community Development, which is designed as a state department of community development designed to help local units of government do a better job with their planning and zoning and to prevent urban sprawl. And the editorial was in response to the wishes of developers because of the housing depression, depressed housing market down there. They wanted to reverse themselves and allow for more urban sprawl, thinking they might be able to get more business to build houses and so forth. But the editorial was against that we should maintain our course on this. Now, there's another element in here that talks about one house per 2 acres, or 2 acres as being the maximum size lot. That's the size of 2 football fields. And it seems like that's, to me, that should be enough space for most people. So I can understand why there's some hesitation here, but I think also from the standpoint of reforming government and delivering government services more efficiently, this is a step in the right direction. It's much more expensive to deliver government services when people are spread out all over the place. If they're in within communities, it's easier to provide city water, sewer, garbage pickup, pick up the kids with a school bus, deliver the mail, provide police and fire protection. And if we want to get more efficient government, which I think most Republicans and Democrats want to do, and we're looking at ways to reform government this session, especially to try to get more efficiency out of the whole system. One thing that would make government more efficient is to have the population located primarily within communities that provide these government services in a compact setting rather than spread out all over the place. So I can understand why there's probably some more work that needs to be done with this bill, but at this point in time, I'm still supporting it. And
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with both Senator Roebling and Senator Dill, even though they seem contradictory. I'll never forget seeing a refrigerator magnet at a friend's home many years ago that said the two worst things that affected the environment were the internal combustion engine and the flush toilet. I'm not going to talk about the internal combustion engine, but the flush toilet part is, I think part of the things that drive these costs. And yet, I'm very sympathetic to having some flexibility people do like the rural environment to live in, and yet when we have 2-acre lot, as you say, 2 football fields, sometimes a smaller lot in a clustering of them would work just fine, and people could, you would have some neighbors, you would have even whether there was school pickup or whatever, but that sewer thing is what gets in the way for it. And I hope maybe Senator Saltzman's bill would help that we could finally get some alternative methods of dealing with our wastewater that are kind of an on-site rather than even with small lots rather than with always having to send a pipe out there, which is extremely costly. We've managed, I don't know how we do it cost-wise, with rural water. Water seems to be gotten to farmsteads at quite wide distance, and I don't know if that's so hugely subsidized or how it is economically feasible. But the sewer thing, I think, is the tough one and is extremely costly to do it. And I hope that somewhere along the way we will get, whether it's adopting some of the Scandinavian models or other things for handling wastewater, that could allow for some clustering and yet not take out a lot of the woodlands or farmlands and yet allow some of that flexibility that I think that Senator Roebling is referring to. It's just that we've locked ourselves into thinking we've got to send a pipe out there. And you're right. It's costly. I hate it, and I wish that we could come up with alternatives.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think the problem's pretty simple. Water will run uphill. Sewer will not. So water lines are much cheaper to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And just all physics.
Okay. Further discussion.
So Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, then water is not the problem in terms of bringing it to a right. Out to a small area, but the sewer is the one that's the conundrum.
Mr. Chairman,
I think we're in agreement.
Senator Olson, I explained to you why.
Yes.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I call your attention to some possible areas of improvement in the language. At page 2, line 18, the end of the line, tracts of land. Delete tracts and insert tracts with a T.
Yes. Good catch.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, that must have been drafted in the House.
Page 3, line 4. After subdivision, insert a comma.
Yep, absolutely.
Page 3, line 6, delete the comma. Page 6, line 20, after area, insert a comma. And line 22, before area, insert the, T-H-E. Line 30, page 6, line 30, delete same. Line 31, delete comma which, and insert that. And that's all.
Mr. Chair. Sorry, I have one more. Page 9, line 4.
delete the only where it is and insert an only after the word used.
Okay.
And then I'll move those that collection.
All right, Senator Higgins moves the suggested changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 913.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Just a thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick explanation. One of the controversial areas has always been kind of beyond the city limits. How does this deal with those areas beyond the city limits differently than under current law?
Mr. Chairman, why don't I have Mr. Peterson from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities speak to that. And that has been where the action has been between the townships and the counties and the cities is the development of what we're now calling a growth area, an agreed-upon growth area that they would do joint planning in. But Mr. Peterson can probably respond to that better than I can.
Mr. Peterson, if you could identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Bradley Peterson. I'm with the firm of Flaherty and Hood, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Senator Stump, to your question, you're right. This is basically the flashpoint of contention in many cases in these issues. And the approach that the bill currently takes is that it would create, essentially carve out around a city, a two-mile growth area in which development would not be allowed. At that point, a city and a township would establish a joint powers board to try to figure out what the long-term future of the surrounding areas would be. It might be less than 2 miles, it might be more than 2 miles, but it really is locally defined in terms of what is going to be the area for growth, for urban development around that city, and under what circumstances is it going to take place. And so it would be a joint powers board after they come up with basically the rough outlines of the plan of what are the contours of that boundary. It would be, under current language here, submitted to the county, who would then be able to review it, reject it if they wished, and then at that point, the county, it would be incumbent upon them to propose a new plan to the Joint Powers Board. And so it really puts the hands in the city, the township, and the county working together. But in the absence of that, if there were no agreements, there would essentially not be development allowed except for some limited circumstances.
So, Mr. Chairman, under current law, they still have the two-mile restriction unless a local county or town has adopted some zoning regulations.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, that is true. It's true that unless the county or the township has some sort of zoning regulation, a city may, by ordinance, extend their zoning and subdivision authority out 2 miles. But in most cases, a county or a township is exercising some sort of land use control, and that's where you end up getting the conflict.
So, Mr. Chairman, are we moving the conflict from we're moving the conflict to a joint powers? How do you see that that balance of power?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, are you saying the balance of power on the joint planning board, or?
Well, I'm just wondering if the balance of power under the new language, under this proposal, would be any easier to work through issues under a joint powers than it would be under the current law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I think here the incentive for everybody to work together is that unless you do, development is limited. And so if you are together trying to envision the long-term future of your community, the community extended beyond the city to include the township and the county, then you really do need to work together to figure that out to the extent that there's going to be development. Right now, Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, there is a hodgepodge of things that happen. But what happens is many cities are left frustrated because they don't necessarily have the tools to bring townships to the table. The annexation process is not necessarily, in the city's minds, flexible enough to force some of those discussions. I believe Senator Olson or Senator Pariseau mentioned that in many cases they can do an annexation by ordinance, but that is very limited, the circumstances under which that can be done. There are provisions in current law where cities and townships can negotiate annexations through orderly annexation agreements, but in many cases that works very well and relations are harmonious, but in many cases it simply does not, because of, you know, various issues that come up that make coming to some sort of agreement not possible. Here what we're saying is if you are not able to come to agreement, essentially, except for, again, limited circumstances, you're really not going to be able to do development.
And one other question, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize for taking so much time, but would once that joint powers would be formed, would the controlling interest over utilities be in the hands of who? The joint powers, the city,
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, the vision is, because it is the municipality that is generally on the hook for extending the services, the development would be planned by the Joint Powers Board, in which the city and the township have equal representation. And so the idea is that as development would occur, it would occur in a manner that would be done so that utilities could be extended from the city to those areas. And so it would be the city still doing and providing the utility service.
Senator Pariseau.
Chairman, actually, I noted too when I was working on this a couple weeks ago that there were three models in statute already, and orderly annexation is one of them. By ordinance is another, and I don't know what the third one is. But I'm aware of the fact that a city that is on the very northern edge of its county has adopted a recent ordinance that they are now, from now on, instead of doing orderly annexation and by agreement with the people in the township and working with them, they're going to do it by ordinance. And they are right up against another county. So if you got county joint power boards, you're going to have two joint power boards meeting because they talked about a two-mile border any place around them. And that goes into the next county. And so I don't see how they could possibly, if they've got their own joint powers board in that county, how they could annex into somebody's neighboring county just because they happen to be within 2 miles. I mean, we're getting just so crazy here. We don't know what we've got on the books and what people are doing out there and how we're messing up what's going to happen in the future. I can see, because I got a call the next day, said this. I just found out yesterday that this particular city put a new ordinance in place. From now on, they're not going to be agreeable.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you're looking at that development and prohibiting development and so forth, the people that you've outlined there might not be the players that you want to deal with, that they're going to leapfrog to get to that and not develop in there, and then you've got a different situation as to how the land use goes. And it seems to me that if you're doing, as you say, that'll be fine if you're only interested in the first two measures there. But when you want to use the development beyond that, roads and schools and all those other kinds of amenities, why we're not really doing very orderly in our land planning.
Mr. Chair, Senator Foley, if I could respond. The vision for this bill actually does deal with the leapfrogging issue that I think you're addressing of what happens outside of the growth area that this is carved out by the city. Your concern, if I'm understanding correctly, is that the development would simply then occur outside of that area. And that's where there is provision in the language that does restrict development in most cases to a standard of one unit per 40 acres. There is some flexibility, as was noted, to do some clustering of developments where counties, and Stearns County, frankly, was the model for that discussion, where they do have clusters, we allow some extra density there. But it really does envision that we are going to start to concentrate intensive urban development near cities so that utilities can be extended, so that you can provide police and fire and ambulance service, so that we are being more mindful about where we're locating schools and businesses and that sort of thing. So we do address, I think, your concern of the leapfrogging issue in that in the bill.
Chair Foley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue, I live in Anoka County, and they've had numerous incidents involving planning and land use and so forth. I spent 19 years on the planning board, and the development has not been very orderly in spite of the efforts that we've put in to bring that into compliance. And I'm worried about, I mean, we're looking this morning, we're commuting to work, and it takes me an hour and 15 minutes because of the travel. The savings factor that we had is gone. I mean, now we're looking at the potential of developing out. And so if somebody wants to get a house, they'll go to Becker or someplace up the road, and so now we have a development that goes from St. Cloud all the way to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I don't see anything that you're telling me here that answers those questions.
Further questions,
Mr.
Or
Chair?
Comments? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, since the cities had the opportunity to express their views on it, maybe we should invite the opposition up, too, just in case, if there is opposition.
Certainly, for somebody who'd like to testify.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Solom with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I hadn't signed up to testify because I thought we were dealing only with the Section 1 and the reference to the fiscal note. But being there has been broader policy discussion mentioned, I guess I'll be very brief and just say that at the township level and my discussions with the counties as well, we don't believe this bill achieves nearly what has been described to you. We understand the intent, and we greatly appreciate Senator Bach's efforts to get us to the table and keep moving forward, because we do agree that there needs to be some better efforts on planning at all levels of government and try to get some good focus. But we don't believe this bill in its current format actually achieves what the proponents are saying. I won't get, unless there are specific questions, I won't get into all the policy discussion because I know that's not germane to this committee. Senator Bach has pledged to us and in the local government committee that he wants to keep working with us, and as he indicated, we may not get it done this session, but we'll keep working over the interim to see if we can reach some accord. But at this point, the Township Association remains very strongly opposed to this bill.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion or questions? Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman and members, I represent 60,000 people that live in cities out of 80,000 people. So this should be a bill that I should really be cheering for. And I will tell you, this is a terrible bill. I don't care whether it's emissions, people that are concerned about our environment. We, for years, have worked out, Senator Vickerman and Senator Hottinger spent years trying to put together coalitions of people to solve these problems. And the cities come in with a proposal. And I hate it that the townships say, well, Senator Bach is going to work with us and put it together. Just stand your ground and say we're opposed to it. We're opposed to Senator Bach. Let him do whatever he wants. This whole bit of trying to put people together all the time at the end and force them into things isn't right, and that's what this bill is trying to do. And it solves nothing. Absolutely solves nothing. So I hope that somewhere along the line, I'll save my firepower for the floor. But we
telling people where they could live and where they can't live and how many pieces of land they have, and Senator Stump, if two towns want to get together and build a school and it's in the middle of the two cities, and we're going to tell them, well, you have to build in one of the cities because it's too cost too much to transport kids, and there's a whole host of things. So I just it's not a good bill. I'm voting no.
Okay. Further discussion, if Sir Robles.
Thank you. And, you know, to me, this bill means simply no more new rural homes. You know, that it seems that most people can't afford 40 acres, and it just is, you know, but that's probably the intent, no more new rural homes. But, you know, this argument that, well, we want to concentrate development because we don't want school buses having to go everywhere and garbage trucks and emergency services. It doesn't matter if there's two farmhouses down the road or if there's five or six houses down the road. They still need the road. The school bus will still go down the road. The garbage truck will still go down the road. You know, the emergency services. In fact, there may be more efficiency in service if there's a few more houses down the road. But, you know, we have these farms all over, and they need services. And so I guess I don't get the argument that if we have a few more houses on the road, that it's going to cost us that much more money. And as Senator Olson had pointed out, there is new technology coming for on-site sewage. And I think that some of it is very good, and we may be able to work very well with it, but people obviously aren't going to have that opportunity with limitations like this on development.
Okay. I think we've all had a chance to talk on this. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, member, just one thought. In 1991, we passed the Wetland Conservation Act, and we finally did that after some counties had lost over 90% of their wetlands. But it was a very difficult bill to pass, and it was basically a planning and zoning bill for the whole state as it relates to wetlands. But we couldn't get it done exactly right the first year. It took us most of the decade of the 90s with reform bills every single year for the remainder of that decade to get it right. And right now we are losing a lot of open space out there, ag land, forest land, and so forth. And I know we probably have to lose a little bit more before we really get serious about this. But I think what Senator Baca said and what has to happen with the townships and the cities and the counties is they need to continue to work on it, as they've already mentioned that they will. And as we move along, we're going to get a bill we can all support, or most of us can support. And it's something that we're going to have to do, because if we continue to lose ag land and open space land at our current rate, at some point in the next 200 or 300 years, you can drive from the Wisconsin border to the South Dakota border and see a house every 5 or 10 acres, and I don't think we want to do that.
Okay. I think Senator Thomasoni had moved that Senate File 913 as amended be recommended to pass. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Dill, how many acres are we now setting aside in the state of Minnesota every year that we don't farm? CRP plan, RIM pram plan. Do you have any idea?
Parkland. Well, a lot of the, Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, a lot of those programs are 10-year or 20-year or perpetual easement programs, so I don't know if I don't have the number in my head right now as to what it is per year that's being set aside. But in terms of lost acres, based on the Department of Agriculture's numbers, it's something like I'm not going to give you a number right now because it's not fresh in my memory, but it is a substantial number of lost acres each year due to urban sprawl. And it's not just the urban sprawl, it's how the urban sprawl occurs. If you've got a 40-acre cornfield, it's nice if you're going to put the house on the corner of the 40 and not in the middle of the 40, where you fragment the 40-acre field, making it much more difficult to farm. And so there's those kinds of factors that need to be taken into consideration. Also, with wildlife production, there's certain types of wildlife that need large, uninterrupted tracts of land to live in. And when you dissect them with roads and houses and so forth, you interfere with the wildlife production. And it also makes it much harder to do forestry. And I've already mentioned the ag land problems with fragmentation.
Senator Thomasoni renews his motion. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chairman.
Let's have a division on it. Yes. What the heck? It's Wednesday, hump day.
Okay. Request by Senator Day for a division.
That's right.
All those in favor, please signify by raising your hand. All those opposed. See, I was right, Senator Day.
That's a
very unenthusiastic.
Thank
yes.
you, Senator Bach. The noes were just a little bit louder on that. Senator Olson, Senate File 1764. Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Let me indicate before Senator Olson begins her explanation of the bill. This is a bill not similar to, but involving some of the same issues as the bill we heard a few minutes ago relative to Senator Saltzman.
Okay.
However, within this bill, you will find appropriation sections. I've talked to Senator Olson about this, and she understands we do not have money for the appropriation section. So when we've had the explanation of the bill, I'll ask for a motion to remove a couple of the sections of the bill. But Senator Olson has indicated to me, as Senator Saltzman talked about previously, Senator Bach in the Tax Committee would like to incorporate a lot of these proposals in the tax bill in terms of the creation of a job creation credit section. So in an effort to take Senator Olson's idea, if the committee approves of it, she's looking, I believe, to have it move to the Tax Committee, but without the appropriation sections. So,
Chairman.
Senator Metz.
Yeah, this is, I mentioned earlier when Senator Saltzman was here that this is one of the parts of the puzzle that the Jobs Committee and Economic Development Committee heard. And, so we unanimously supported this concept. But again, this is one of six or seven bills that encourage job creation and grow our tax base.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. And as Senator Metzen indicated, Senate File 1764 has traveled with unanimous support through his committee. Also, Senator Tomasoni's Economic Development Committee, and had an informational hearing, favorable hearing, I believe, in the Tax Committee this morning. It was just informational because the bill is actually here in this committee for the at present. But what Senate File 1764 envisions is an economic development program that's a partnership between the state, between local governments, and between potential venture capital projects, business entrepreneurs, most likely people who are already living and working in Minnesota or potentially just graduating from our colleges, and have an idea for a business that would meet a policy goal that the state would have an interest in incenting. And this is a bill, as I said, in the Tax Committee that really has been in the works for me for a couple of years. As I've sat on Senator Tomasoni's committee and learned something about the concept of economic development, not something I've had any background in before, and then gone back to my own community and talked to people there who work in city planning and economic development and mayors of my communities about, you know, what's working and what isn't working and what would be helpful to them in trying to stimulate economic growth in their area. And so this bill is both broad in the sense that it's available potentially anywhere in the state. It's not like, say, Job Z, where it's targeted to a specific region. But it's also a targeted economic development proposal because the criteria that would be reviewed by DEED in determining where to make grants available would be based on the level of unemployment and the average household income in the area applying for the grant in a particular year, which of course might potentially change from year to year, but those would be criteria that would be used in measuring the availability of grant funds to a particular area. And so basically how this proposal is designed to work is that a local unit of government would identify in their particular community something that they would see as a desirable business opportunity, something they would like to incent. And for example, mayors in small communities where I've lived have talked about either a particular area or even a particular business building that's perhaps maybe pulling down the rest of the block or the area because it's vacant and is in need of redevelopment. There have been also opportunities for someone in a community, and again in my area, we're looking at a lot of opportunities for new biofuel products or projects where someone may need the equipment to go out there and get the machinery that would be necessary to use byproducts from the forest industry, for example, making them into pellets and something that would help to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And so the proposal would be made by the local government to DEED, and then DEED would review the proposal based on the criteria, the eligibility criteria that are listed in subdivision 5. And those criteria are all just based on things that over the last couple of years we've talked about as a state as being policy areas that we would like to, or good policy for the state and things we've worked on incentivizing. The first one would be having an area or a building that is in need of redevelopment or restoration. And I think that's particularly relevant today when we have a lot of mortgage foreclosures and a difficulty often, you know, because of the tightness in financing, difficulty obtaining the financing that might be necessary to redevelop or restore a particular business or area. The second, utilizing federal stimulus money is a good idea for our state because whenever we can bring in additional capital at the federal level, it's a win-win for both states and local governments. Number three would be assisting with meeting Minnesota's renewable energy standards. And Senator Dibble in the previous committee suggested that we should also add together with renewable energy standards and energy conservation goals as set forth in 216B.2401. Because the bill was not actually in Senator Bach's committee, we weren't able to make that an amendment. So I'm just making you aware whether this committee would like to add that language or it can be done at a later point in Senator Bach's committee if this committee approves the bill. Number four, reducing greenhouse gases and dependency on fossil fuels is similarly something that we would like to incent. Number five, assisting resident entrepreneurs and businesses to initiate or expand in a manner that creates sustainable jobs compatible with the resources in a particular area, something we obviously try to do with any of our economic development efforts. Six is specifically related to research and development of innovative non-traditional uses of resources, so some creative new ways to use resources. That's been particularly important up in my area where we've had a lot of difficulty with our forest products industry with the downturn in the economy, but looking for new and creative ways to use the resources we have in a particular area is something that we would like to incent as a state. Number seven, integrating support services and businesses in a central location. I think a great model we saw for that was the Global Marketplace here in the Twin Cities, and there have been some other successful incubators. I think there's one in the Wilmer area, and that's been a successful way to stimulate businesses in some areas. And then number eight, reaching out to certain populations that are underrepresented in the workforce. Once again, if we can get people working who are not necessarily traditionally where there's a high area of unemployment, if we can help to get those people working, it's good for the state from a taxpayer standpoint. It's good for the local governments as well. Now, this list isn't necessarily all-inclusive. There probably could be other good ideas added to this list, but this was a list that was developed talking to local units of government and people who work in the area of economic development and with the help of Senate counsel from Senator Tomasoni's committee. I'd certainly be open to other suggestions. And then subdivision six is, as I said, that's the targeting section. So as DEED is looking at these competitive grant applications from local units of government, they would factor in the rate of unemployment and household income there so that to the extent that we have money available, obviously if we had lots of money available for a program like this, we could make it more widely, you know, used around the state. If less money is available, it would be targeted to the areas that are most in need. The type of capital or the type of help that's envisioned through this would be an either lower or no income loan, venture capital loan fund. There would be flexibility there that would be set forth in the grant application, whether it was going to be used for infrastructure redevelopment, for purchasing of equipment, or whatever the need might be for that particular business, and that would be evaluated by deed. So there's quite a bit of flexibility there. But then there's also going to be accountability built into the system, both for the business having to sell their project to the local government having to get the approval through deed, and then the local government will be prioritized for additional future grants based on how successful the project has been. And so there's some built-in accountability. Also, we're looking here at a loan. We're not looking at a program that's necessary. That's a giveaway. We're looking at a help rather than a an outright grant, with the expectation that the loan will be repaid back to this fund. Now, as Senator Cohen said, however, because there's no money available in the state right now, and I'm not sure exactly what Senator Bach would be intending to do in his committee, other than he's expressed an interest in this idea, and we'll have to work with that. But I think that what would be necessary to pass this through this committee without funding would be to remove Subdivision 7 of Section 1, which relates to the revolving fund, and Section 2, which is the appropriation.
And Senator Olson, as you and I have discussed, unfortunately, just given the circumstances of this year's session and where the state budget is, that unless something is done within a division bill, we simply don't have the money to fund freestanding bills. So, or to appropriate more money to a target for a division to do some things would be pretty good ideas. So obviously, if the tax committee has the ability to fold this into what Senator Bach would like to do, that would be great. But Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm missing something here, but the whole bill, as I read it, is all about how to administer this program, and if you don't have a program because you don't have the appropriation for it, then I don't understand how the rest of the bill can go forward.
Well, Senator Berglund, I think what, as Senator Olson and Senator Bach have discussed with me, Senator Bach is trying to take job creation proposals and rather than appropriate money, is going to try to do something through utilization of tax credits. I don't know if he'll succeed with this legislation. I think if Senator Olson had realized where she would be earlier in the session, she would have drafted this in a different way as opposed to drafting it as an appropriations bill, as a finance bill. And again, she's made the request that if the idea can be presented to the tax committee, that it's possible that the tax committee could, through Senator Bach's tax credit proposal, fund this. And I don't know if that's going to be possible or not. But again, I think, Senator Olson, you would have drafted this differently if maybe you had sat down with us at the start of the session and understood that there would not be the money to fill in the appropriations section.
Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly happy to let Senator Olson have her chance in the tax committee, but I just need to say that I don't understand how this program could turn into a tax program either.
And Senator Berglund, I'm not sure either, and it's possible that we're sending on, to be honest, a shell of a bill to the tax committee. As we discussed earlier, the tax committee is kind of a committee of magic. I remember when the previous chairman had money in the bill for two professional sports stadiums, and that kind of surprised us, as I recall.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess, for one, I think that while we unfortunately can't act like the tax committee, I also don't think the tax committee should be acting like the appropriations committee.
Yeah, and obviously I was being facetious with my comment, because I've talked to Senator Bach about this. His intent is to do this through the utilization of tax credits, not simply having money at the bottom line. unlike what had happened with the professional sports stadiums. So I would agree with you. I don't know, and I talked to Senator Olson about this yesterday, I don't know if this proposal, without any financing out of the Finance Committee, has any ability to carry on. It would have to be done through the creation of some kind of tax credit to fit into what Senator Olson is trying to accomplish.
Senator Cohen, I'll make the motion for Senator Olson to remove Subdivision 2 and from Section 2 and...
Senator Berglund, it's Subdivision 7 of Section 1 and Section 2.
And renumber the reference.
And Subdivision 7.
Renumber the section.
So it'd be page 2, lines 29 through the rest of the page through 3.3.
And then to renumber the appropriate sections. On the Berglund motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1764 as amended be recommended with be passed to the Tax Committee without recommendation.
That we have.
And I make it that motion that way because we don't know what form it might take in the Tax Committee, and I think that these programs really should be decided in Senator Tomasoni's division, where they're compared with like the programs like the Minnesota Investment Fund and other programs that we have in place.
And Senator Frederickson, I don't disagree. Again, I think Senator Olson finds herself in an awkward position to the extent that the bill was sent to Finance. It was a Finance bill initially. Senator Tomasoni wanted to take a look at these bills. Again, I think Senator Olson is kind of caught in the middle. So I think Senator Frederickson's motion to pass without recommendation would be an appropriate one to the Tax Committee as amended. And Senator Olson, and good luck in the Tax Committee. On the Frederickson motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Then we're going to get back to Senate File 657, Senator Anderson. I think, Senator Anderson, you've got everything ready for us. So thanks for filling in earlier. We have a delete everything amendment. We have a more minor amendment. We have the fiscal note. Senator Olson, do you want to pick up from where you left off?
So,
nobody talked to me about it.
They're switching chairs.
Committee has before it Senate File 657. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said by way of introduction earlier, this is the Green Energy and Green Jobs Bill. How's that? From the federal stimulus dollars. A little better. I do have, before I go through the spreadsheet again, or finish going through the spreadsheet, we do have a delete all amendment, which I would like the committee to adopt. And my understanding of the amendment is that it is making technical changes and corrections, and that there should not be substantive changes in here. And some of them were wording changes and things like that, so they did go throughout the bill, and so it was easier to present it as a delete all amendment. But my understanding from all the staff involved is that it is just technical changes to the same bill. And then I have a small language amendment on top of that. So I don't know if there's questions about the delete all amendment. Otherwise, I would move the A15 delete all amendment.
Senator Anderson has moved adoption of the A15 amendment. Since this is a delete all amendment, I'll give members a chance if they want to raise questions about it. Seeing no discussion, Senator Anderson moved to adoption of the A15 amendment. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator
Thank
Anderson.
You. And Mr. Chair, I also have the A17 amendment, and this is some language that was in the bill, and it just seemed to have dropped out in the delete all amendment. So I'm just putting it was intended to be moved from the weatherization program to the other general residential energy efficiency program. And so this is I believe it's identical language to what's in the bill as it left committee.
that just directs the state agency, the Office of Energy Security, as they're working on this residential energy efficiency program, to have a variety of approaches, including a neighborhood saturation and a quick fix component.
Senator Anderson has moved the adoption of the A-17 amendment, and it puts in the bill section that was inadvertently dropped out when it left division. Discussion? Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of adopting the A-17 amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'd just like to go through the spreadsheet, if members can locate that again.
Find that.
And just quickly, what I had mentioned before was that the big, out of about $200 million of federal stimulus money, about $131 million of it is for the existing weatherization program. There are some small changes. The federal government did raise the income eligibility level a little bit, but it's for low-income Minnesota households. And I mentioned before that that should allow us to weatherize many thousands more homes than we would in a typical year or two. The next two appropriations are the block grants to local governments, and that's the $6.3 million and a $4.25 million, and those are passed through from the Office of Energy Security to cities and counties around the state for the purpose of retrofitting energy efficiency improvements in all kinds of public buildings, including schools. Then I will go through the allocations that we are proposing for the state energy program, and that's the $54 million appropriation from the federal government. First, you'll see on the spreadsheet under SEP the public building retrofits for schools and local government and state buildings, and they're listed separately, but we've appropriated a total of $13 million for this program. And this piggybacks on policy implementing language that was passed in the last couple of years, but expands that by allowing programs that, well, the stimulus dollars will be used to cover up to 25% of the cost for a local government, a school district, a state agency, which has a building that needs energy retrofits, to put those in place. And it would set up a process whereby the energy savings would help to pay back the loan cost, so that it would be, there'd be a net savings and there wouldn't be an outlay of capital beyond the initial stimulus dollars, and then the as I said, the savings would pay back the improvements.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Could I ask something about that? Suppose energy costs rise a lot and their costs are not showing savings, so to speak. They may be using less, but their costs are up. Is it based on the use then, or is it based on the bill?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, first let me say that the state has done an audit, a statewide audit of public buildings across the state, so we have pretty good information about how much energy is being used by public buildings now. And with these retrofits, and we can go through the language a little bit if you want some details about what they could be used for, but all kinds of things, the building envelope, windows, insulation, HVAC systems, other things that would increase the energy efficiency of the building. So whatever the cost of that improvement, I believe there's a requirement in here that says it has to be cost effective within a 10-year payback, I believe. And so in order to finance them, the improvements under this program, they could only do improvements that would pay for themselves in 10 years' time. Okay. And as energy costs rise, it becomes cheaper to pay for those. You are paying them back more quickly because your energy bill is higher, but you've reduced that increase that you would have otherwise gotten. I hope I explained that right. But does that start to answer your question? I hope. Okay. So we believe there's, you know, and I don't have the numbers here, but I can try to provide those for interested people. I don't know if anyone has costed out how much energy we could save, but it's an enormous amount just by retrofitting these public buildings that we can do with this amount of money, and then including the energy savings. This will translate into actual budget savings for whatever school or state agency building or whatever entity it is over the 10 years plus period, they will actually see savings to their bottom line because of reduced energy costs. It's also the type of improvement that is extremely labor intensive and creates many, many, many jobs. We're working on trying to get a more detailed analysis of the job numbers that we can expect from these dollars, and hopefully I'll have that by the time this bill goes to the floor. The next major energy efficiency program that we're funding is called the Residential Energy Financing Program, and we put $15 million into that. And that is intended to supplement weatherization programs so that they would be available to anyone who doesn't qualify for the lower income levels for weatherization programs. So this would be for kind of upper lower income and middle income Minnesotans would be eligible for these kinds of financing opportunities. And the MHFA, the Housing Finance Agency, will be delivering these dollars in large part through low interest loans or rebates or other, you know, other financing mechanisms that make it affordable, hopefully, for more and more homeowners to do the same things to their homes that we talked about with businesses or with public buildings, so that they could do the building envelope, they could potentially replace windows, they could upgrade to a more efficient furnace, they could do a range of energy improvements. And of course it depends on the home and the condition, which of those would be most cost effective. We set aside $1.5 million of that amount for an innovative program in Duluth, which is based on a lot of partnerships around the city and a plan that they have to really maximize these dollars and try to cover their whole city with energy efficiency improvements, leveraging dollars from a lot of sources, and trying to use some really innovative financing mechanisms, like, for example, allowing homeowners to pay for the energy efficiency improvements on their home through their energy bill or through their property tax assessment or other kinds of things, whatever they can come up with that would make it easier for homeowners to finance those improvements. Because a big barrier for a lot of people, even if they can save money over 5 or 10 years, you don't necessarily want to go to the bank and take out another loan. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible. And so this pilot program in Duluth is intended to really give us some results on how we can maximize residential efficiency, and that will help utilities build their programs in the future. The next program is the Commercial Industrial Shared Savings Grants, and this is we recommended $7 million for this program. This idea was initiated by the St. Paul Port Authority, but we have established it as a statewide program here. And the St. Paul Port Authority proposal is based on our very successful project in St. Paul with the Rock 10 plant at doing very significant energy efficiency audits of that plant and figuring out how they could reduce their energy costs by 20 to 30% with improvements that pay back within a very short period of time, you know, 6 months to 2 to 3 years. But improvements that company, for example, was unable to finance because the parent company didn't want to invest in the plant. And so with a revolving loan fund, you'd be able to allow commercial industrial facilities to make these kinds of improvements and pay for them themselves with a revolving loan component, pay for them with the energy savings and finance those opportunities. We also included conversion of ethanol plants to a renewable energy source as one of the, or to efficient, more efficient energy source under this commercial industrial program. And finally, we have some renewable energy programs that we recommend. And I should point out that of all the state energy program dollars, the $54 million, we put about two-thirds into energy efficiency and one-third into renewable energy, efficiency being the more cost-effective and more immediate energy savings, but renewable energy being also important way to diversify and reduce fossil fuel use and save on-site energy demand. So the renewable energy program includes the biggest component is for cities and schools, so that local governments and schools that are interested in installing solar or a wind turbine or other renewable projects like that can get a grant to help with that installation. We did designate one very small project in the city of Kennedy in Senator Stumpf's district for to help build a green business center there that will focus on renewable energy companies. Renewable energy electric generation for small facilities. This will allow a homeowner who wants to put up a very small wind turbine in their property or solar one that would just provide enough energy to run their own home or farm to provide grants for that. That was a Senator Scogin proposal. We are funding the clean energy resource teams, which are around the state, are community-based groups that work with local organizations and local governments and local utilities, and we're funding them to do a massive outreach across the state to let homeowners, businesses, et cetera, know about the opportunities for weatherization and renewable energy investment under these stimulus dollars. And so this outreach plan is intended to reach 2% of Minnesota homes and to knock on doors. I guess it's mostly targeted at homeowners. I didn't quite say that right. That they will knock on the doors of 2% of Minnesota homes and let them know about these opportunities so that we can make sure we get these dollars to work as quickly as possible. Finally, two more items. One is for solar. We put a $7 million investment into solar, and part of that is designated for the Central Corridor area between Minneapolis and St. Paul, where there's an opportunity where our local utility, Xcel, wants to put a demonstration project of a concentrated solar investment in one location to see how successful that can integrate with the grid and work to provide energy in a community. And the rest of the money would be available statewide for grants for solar. Then we have three, the $822,000 is the last appropriation here that's listed as applied research certification technology transfer. This refers to three different proposals that we have, and we're sort of lumping them together and asking the Department of Commerce to sort out which ones would be eligible for these funds based on a competitive grant. And one is a proposal for the solar certification lab that would be at the St. Paul campus and the Morris campus of the University of Minnesota to test solar technology so that it's ready for market and so that Minnesota companies that are producing these technologies can get them into the marketplace more quickly. The second proposal is for a Mankato State project that would transfer technology from Sweden and try to get that technology out in the marketplace quickly as well for residential biomass and other renewable technology. And the third piece is for a testing facility for energy efficiency products to make sure that those products are tested and that consumers are able to obtain up-to-date information about the energy efficiency capability of products that they're looking at installing with these dollars. A couple other things I mentioned quickly. We do limit in the administrative section, we limit the administrative costs that the Office of Energy Security can take out of these dollars to 5%. The federal law allows 10%, which would be about $20 million. 5% seems more than adequate, and they've requested some two dozen new staff people to implement and administer these dollars, which I think is very appropriate, and this would cover a lot more than that in terms of allowing their other administrative expenses to be covered to utilize this. So their staffing would be temporary as long as these stimulus dollars are available. And then finally, we have some reporting and accountability language that requires that we get reports back on a regular basis every 3 months because this is an unusual situation where we have money only available for 18 months and we want to make sure it's being used wisely and quickly and is resulting in energy savings and jobs as it's intended. And so we have reporting requirements that will give us that information on a regular and timely basis. That's pretty much the bill. I don't think you need me to go through all the language unless there are specific questions. I'd be happy to do that.
Are there questions from the committee for Senator Anderson? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Anderson, do you know, does when we talk about weatherization, we generally think of like insulating or things like that. Is it possible to use upgrading, let's say, lighting under weatherization?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, absolutely. And we specify lighting upgrades in a number of these programs, as well as windows, which was one of your initiatives, because there's a range of things that can be used to save energy. And when you talk about saving energy, you're looking at thermal heat energy as well as electricity. And so in Minnesota, both of those are really important components of our energy bill and our energy usage. So the lighting piece goes more directly to the electricity usage. But those would definitely be eligible for these programs. And sometimes lighting upgrades are one of the more cost-effective things that you can do and low cost, as opposed to windows, which tend to be on the high cost and aren't going to be appropriate for every retrofit. But we also specified that we want window replacement to be on the list of opportunities, because it's not only important to help seal that building envelope, and it creates more jobs, because in Minnesota we have those window manufacturers. So it's got a real extra bang for the buck.
Thank Senator you. Parasol.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, I was looking at the section that has residential energy, and I note that that there are, obviously there would be some match. But where does the match come from? Is that supposed to be, I mean, there's talk about a match in one
which
section.
Can you show me what page, or tell me what?
I'm looking at page 3 and 4. Equivalent to the 25% that's stated on page 3.
I'm guessing.
And I'm wondering, is the residential energy on page 3, which is the 13.5 figure, is that intended for the foreclosed homes or the low income only, or both of those categories together? For anyone who needs to have the same kind of service, regardless of category of their income.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
Caruso, if you look on the very first page, the weatherization assistance program, that's $131 million. That's the really big pot of money, and that's the one that's based on you have to be at 200% of poverty or below to be eligible for that, which is about 590,000, almost 600,000 Minnesota households would be eligible for that. Then if you go to page 3, the one you were looking at where it says residential energy, that 13.5 plus the 1.5 for Duluth, that $15 million is set aside for everybody else. And that's
you don't have to be low income to qualify for that.
No, okay. You do not. And so this is intended to be
I think about grants. The people who lost their homes already, and now we're helping the people who are going to lose their homes, but we didn't help people who already did. So.
Well, and Mr. Chair, on the foreclosure issue, we ask specifically ask the departments to apply to the federal government for a waiver, because the problem with foreclosed homes, if they're vacant, they're not eligible for most programs because there's nobody living there. And but it makes sense to be able to, in some cases, to be able to fix up those homes so that they're sellable and that somebody can benefit by living in them with lower energy costs. And, you know, it has multiple benefits. So we're asking for them, for the MHFA and the Office of Energy Security to apply to for a waiver to the federal government to allow some of these funds, whether weatherization or other residential energy funds, to be used to fix up foreclosed homes in places where it's deemed a good use of dollars, as long as someone would be eligible to live in those homes who would be income eligible for the weatherization service.
Thank you.
Senator Bickerman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, we talked about foreclosure homes and before, but when I picked up the Minneapolis paper today, I don't know if you've looked at that yet, but there was a young woman or young lady that bought a home for $75,000. And if you read through it, but all the copper's gone. So would she qualify? I mean, you.
Senator Anderson?
I think that's what we're trying to get at. It costs a lot of money to put all those copper pipes back.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bickerman, under weatherization, she might make too much money to apply to be eligible for the weatherization program, I'm assuming, because the income, if she's a single person, she probably couldn't afford to buy a house if she makes $21,000 a year, unless she got some one of those new, you know, there are some tax breaks available and some incentives for first-time homebuyers. So if she was eligible for weatherization dollars, she could get a whole range of retrofits to her home. I don't know if it would include replacing copper pipes, but it could include installing a new heating system, which would go along part of the ways. You know, it wouldn't mean her whole plumbing system could be upgraded with weatherization dollars, because they are intended only to reduce your energy consumption and save your energy dollars. So certainly a lot of the improvements could be made that need to be made, but she'd have to come up with some other dollars for some of the other improvements.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bickerman.
Senator Anderson, I'd like to put in here veterans' preference, but I can't. So, but I hope that people would look. We're trying to get homeless veterans off the streets, into a home. And I would hope that we would take a look at that and help them if at all possible.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, under the Commercial Industrial Shared Savings Grants, you mentioned projects as big as ethanol plants. Will there be any limit on the amount of grant that will be available? Because I can imagine you could have seven big commercial projects that could use up all this money at once, and you wouldn't be spreading this very far.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling.
Senator Anderson.
I guess we didn't put a specific limit on this funding source, because it's intended primarily to be used as a loan product, so that it would be a revolving loan fund. And so this is one of the uses of the stimulus dollars that I think is really effective, because you could get all the money out in pretty quickly and put, you know, and meet federal requirements for putting it to use, but then it would start to come back. And so this would be a long-term program that could last beyond the terms of the stimulus funds. Because a lot of these commercial industrial retrofits are so cost-effective that they can pay for themselves, like I said, in less than 2-3 years. Once they're paid back, then the fund will be replenished. And so it would work as some of the projects could be expensive, but they would work. It would work as a revolving fund, so that there'd be money available to do more. And that's what, you know, the utilities in their conservation improvement programs, 95% of the conservation work that utilities do is with commercial industrial customers, because that's where most of the that's where you can save the most memories of high school.
Oh, sorry.
New telephone.
Telling us it's time for caucus.
I think he's trying to say that your bill is dust in the wind.
Works. I have a better
way.
As a radio, huh?
Yeah.
I like that song.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson.
I move the bill. Is there a volume?
It is.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yay. Cool. Good job, Matt.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That's only the IT money.
Yeah. Senator Roebling, as they would say down at the plant, Senator Betzel, you don't know nothing about that there technology. Just turn that off.
You want to hear Green Acres?
Like
I can play Green Acres here, too.
Oh. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I've been hearing all these ads on the radio for putting in new energy efficient windows, and you're going to get $1,500 back. Now, how many programs are there out there? And obviously, we haven't passed this one yet, so it isn't speaking to this program. How is all of this working together?
Senator Anderson.
Senator Roebling, that's a great question. There is a federal tax credit already passed, and that was some of those programs were passed a year ago. Some of them were extended from previous programs, and then there's some new ones in the stimulus bill. So bottom line is, I've been telling my husband, if we're ever going to do these improvements, we got to do them now, because you're never going to have so many opportunities for incentives as you are in the next year and a half to put in new windows, to insulate your home, to to put a solar panel on your roof, because it's never going to be, you know, there's a package of opportunities available. There's federal tax credits for that $1,500, and those are for energy efficiency improvements. That can include insulation, new windows, a high-efficiency furnace, if it's Energy Star. The utilities, I mean, in the Energy Policy Committee, we spent a lot of time talking about what they're offering. And, for example, we're putting in new opportunities for utilities to match incentives for solar installation on a home or on a business. And so there will be, there's federal, and those are matched by some very generous federal tax credits. So you can patch these things together. You can look at your utility rebates. You can use these stimulus dollars and federal tax credits and buy down the cost of a lot of improvements dramatically in a way that we've never been able to do before. So that the idea is to get people across the state to realize, and the private sector is really helping to advertise a lot of that and get, you know, hopefully generate some business. But we really want Minnesotans to take advantage of these opportunities fast. And that's why we're going to get dramatic energy savings around the state if we do this, if we deliver these programs quickly.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I'm looking at the section on the renovations for state government buildings. And I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to talk to you before about this. I've been kind of all wound up in the division I chair, which has, as part of it, our prison system. And we have some really old, drafty, energy hog buildings in our system. And I was wondering whether there is funding here that would help us to replace windows or do other things in those buildings.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that's exactly what this is for. For any kind of a state building like that, and they presume they probably already had an energy audit under the Buildings Benchmarks and Beyond B3 audit that was done around the state of our public buildings. And so these kinds of opportunities can really happen pretty quickly, given that we've done the auditing work. And there was already a program that was in a bill Senator Dibble passed last year, I think, that created this PB, it's just another acronym, but it's basically the idea is that you can do a revolving loan type way of paying for it. It sets up a program so that you can use energy, a public facility can use the savings by reduced energy consumption to pay off the expenses. Sure. And this makes sort of turbocharges that by putting a 25% of the cost up front is covered with stimulus dollars. So absolutely, they should get in line quickly.
Okay. In line where?
The Office of Energy Security is the part of Commerce. That's our energy agency. And they're the ones that will be, that all this funding is going directly to from the federal government. And this is where these appropriations will start.
And, Mr. Chair, just one more question then. Along with that, kind of had in the back of my mind that they could actually use some of the inmates to do the work and learn a skill that they, when they get done with their prison time, they could, you know, have a skill ready to go find a job with in the new green economy. Is there any extra funding for, like, training for that type of work?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, there's a large allocation for training that's available out of the weatherization dollars.
Okay.
And we have some language that just encourages or requires the department to really reach out to disadvantaged communities with the training opportunities. And the CAP agencies do a lot of that now because they deliver the weatherization programs for the most part around our state. And so they do some of the training. Some, you know, there's unions that have training programs for some of these opportunities. There's MinSCU has some. So there's a lot of different opportunities for training that already exist, and this is going to help fund more of those. In terms of something specifically directed at inmates, that might take a little bit of work to make that happen, but I think it could work. Absolutely.
Thanks.
So I would work with, you know, have corrections talk with some of the other agencies that are involved in delivering these dollars.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Anderson, Mr. Mosman,
was telling me that in Section 10 we might have a conflict with an open appropriation and federal funds, and I asked Mr. Mosman to briefly give us an explanation and see what you want to do with it.
Mr. Chair, members, Section 10 of the bill, and in specifically on line 16.7, authorizes state agencies and local governments to apply for, accept, and spend competitive grants. State agencies can already do this, and you may all be familiar with the federal funds review process in Chapter 3, which requires that the legislature have an opportunity to review federal grants that are received before they are spent under open appropriations authority. The issue here would be that this language could potentially be interpreted as allowing expenditure of these funds without your notification. And so I think you have two options. One item to avoid that conflict that you could consider is to, on line 7 of page 16, to delete, accept, and spend. And, of course, they already have that authority, so then they could do that under Chapter 3 of statutes. The other option would be to leave that language and then on line 8, after 2009, add subject to Section 3.3005. And I think either one of those would work.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good suggestion. I guess I don't know which one is better. Number 2? Maybe that's a little clearer.
Okay. Senator Anderson has moved on page 16, line 8, after 2009, insert subject to Section 3.3005.
It's in Minnesota statute
section. Minnesota statute section 3.3005. Discussion on Senator Anderson's motion to amend. Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of adopting the amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Did we adopt the A-17 amendment?
Senator Higgins, we did.
We did. Okay.
Senator Anderson?
All right, Mr. Chair, if there's no further discussion, I would move that Senate File 657 as amended be recommended to pass to the Senate floor.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Could I get a clarification? If you said Minnesota Statute Section 3, don't you go to the chapter first, or what does that mean? Is it 3.3005? Not familiar with that numbering. Thank you.
Senator Anderson has moved that Senate File 657 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails and the bill is sent to the floor. There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.